Thanks for tuning in to the Glossy Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Priya Rao, Executive Editor at Glossy. These last few weeks, this feed was dedicated to Unfair, our narrative podcast series about the skin lightening industry. If you haven't heard Unfair yet, you'll find it in the same podcast feed you're listening to now. But as for today, we're getting back to our regular weekly programming. I'm delighted to be joined by Marcelo Camberos, the CEO of Ipsy. Welcome, Marcelo.
Thank you, Priya, for having me.
Thanks so much for being here, Marcelo. You know, I talked to you very soon after COVID started in March. And I feel like at the beginning, for you, it was very much trying to get the logistics all in place. If I remember, there were supply chain issues, you know, making sure that you were an essential place that you could put the boxes together, get the products together. And you felt pretty confident moving into April and May, if I remember correctly. How do you feel now that we're in month 8? Of COVID?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think it's a new normal now, right? I think we went through the early days, which is when we talked, and then maybe it's, you know, a lot of ups and downs. And now it seems like this is the place we're at for a while. And so feeling really good about all the changes we made in March to set us up for where we are now. And I think we're feeling very confident about all of our growth prospects and where the company's at.
So will you walk through for our listeners some of the pain points or changes that you made in those early days that you're speaking of?
First of all, everything changed. And so I would say from our business initiatives, we changed probably more than half of our business initiatives for the year. And so we said, this is a new world. We need to act quickly. Within a, I would say, 3 to 4 week period, our forecast for the year completely changed, not just from a financial perspective, but what we were going to be doing. And the theme of what we were trying to accomplish is, how can we be a bigger part of our members' lives in this world where they really need us, where it's much harder to go to physical retail and feel confident doing so? And how can we provide more value? And what we thought was kind of the key way that we could do that is to give them more control and give them more control in terms of the merchandise that they get and provide them more control and more opportunity via personal care items as well as beauty items that we're putting into the glam bags.
I'm wondering from your perspective what you thought of the subscription box market pre-COVID, because I know, you know, Ipsy has always had a very strong business. I know that you have, you know, surpassed a lot of your competitors in this space, and you were creating strategies around events and personalization. But there was this larger theme, I think, in the beauty industry that there was this fatigue around getting a box every month, or, you know, especially with like the Birch boxes or the FabFitFuns of the world. But now when testers and sampling are basically obsolete, I mean, how do you do product discovery today?
Yeah, there's always been the potential for fatigue. And every month we have to answer one main question for our members. Was it worth it for me this month? And that's a very tough thing to do month in and month out. And so if we answer it in the no, it wasn't worth it, our members will churn and they'll go elsewhere, or they'll stop, you know, receiving our boxes. If the answer is yes, which I think we've been fortunate that we've been able to provide that yes answer for a long period of time for our members now, then they stay with us. And so a lot goes into that question. But from a member's perspective, what they ask themselves is pretty much always the same question. Was it worth it? You know, I paid $12 or $25 for the full size. Was it worth it? And that comes in the form of, were the brands exciting? Were they well personalized for me? And did the bag arrive on time? And was the customer service really good? And just the overall experience? And finally, did I find education about the products and inspiration that helped me get the most out of the products that I got?
How do you kind of level that up now? Because I know when we talked in the spring, you know, Sephora had just kind of revamped their boxes. You know, obviously we just mentioned about testers and sampling, but I'm sure a glut of brands wanted to be with Ipsy because they had these samples, they had these products, they had to get them somewhere. But what made them right or wrong for you all?
Yeah, it's right now. It's the brands have come to us in a much bigger way than they ever have, because like you said, you know, department stores are troubled. There's no testers at Sephora, Ulta, or anywhere, and they need to get the word out. And so we've always worked very successfully with brands, but I would say that we knew that we had an even bigger responsibility now to help them get the word out. And so it's allowed us to bring in some brands that we hadn't worked with before, but even with the brands that we worked in the past many, many years, be more strategic with them and really help them out in a broader way.
Can you describe that strategic part? Like maybe who the brands are, or, you know, what you're doing differently now to maybe, you know, make their message more amplified at this time?
Yeah, sure. I mean, brands have always come to us mainly for new product releases. So we have brands that have been coming to us twice a year for their new product releases for probably 6 or 7 years now. Amazing brands like Too Faced, Urban Decay, a lot of the ELC brands, L'Oreal, Shiseido, but also a lot of independent brands that are newer brands that need to get the word out. What we've been able to do for them in an even bigger way is just connect them more within the influencer circles, our creator circles, get them more earned media. I mean, the brands, what they really want is they want earned media. They want a base level of support. So when they launch their brands, there's just a lot of earned media out there and a lot of buzz out there so that launch becomes more successful. And that's the number one focus for us. Some brands are also interested in the data that we can provide. And for those brands, we have a plethora of data, 160 million product reviews, as you know, Priya. And that can really help them on an aggregate basis try to understand the success and where they really hit the market well with their new products.
When you think about where we are right now, you know, there's this big conversation happening around color cosmetics, which I know obviously you guys had a very strong foothold in, versus skincare and, you know, new product fatigue. Like, do you need another like 12 shade palette or 28 shade palette? So how are you all navigating that piece? Because, you know, the newness in beauty is what makes the beauty industry go round. But at the same time, we're not doing as much as regular customers. We're not going out to events. We're not going out, you know, to work. How are you approaching that?
Well, I mean, I think in COVID, I think color is still very important. I mean, I'm looking at you right now on Zoom. I don't know that we ever had actually a face-to-face conversation. So actually, this is the first time that we're kind of seeing each other. And it took COVID to do that. So I do think that, and you look great, by the way.
Thank you.
So you are wearing color cosmetics. And I think that's the theme. People, you know, they want to look their best when they're in front of the camera. And they're actually seeing themselves all day. I'm like, now, you know, it makes it more real and more conscious for you. So we haven't seen a decline in color that maybe other companies have seen. I think what's happened is there have been a lot of direct-to-consumer companies that are in color that have been doing well. What we have seen is that we've seen an increase in self-care and an increase in skincare and tools in a really, really big way. And so how do we help the member there? Well, we are by far the most personalized subscription service out there. And as you know, with ultra personalization, now you can choose 3 out of your 5 products. And so that's just, you know, it changes the game, right? Because if you can choose 3 of your 5 and you can get the exact categories that you want, it's so much more valuable for you. And so that's really how that's critical for the member. The member really wants to get the categories that they want to get. They're willing to experiment with brands. They're willing to experiment with new techniques and with new ingredients. But at the end of the day, they want to do so with the categories that they're interested in.
Would you talk a little bit about the replenishment piece in color or with any of your kind of products right now, what you're either hearing from your brand partners or what you're seeing with Ipsy itself? You know, I've heard, especially with color, you know, with foundation, with concealer, people aren't looking at new brands. They're buying the same NARS foundation or concealer. That's me, for instance, my NARS foundation, you know, that they were buying pre-COVID. So that's a really tricky category to kind of break into. So are you seeing that, like, from your perspective, that it is becoming more of a replenishment business versus a, you know, a new business, a new acquisition?
Certainly with ultra personalization and being able to choose three out of your five products, it does lend itself a little bit better to a replenishment, to kind of blending, the boundaries between discovery and replenishment. And we love that because, you know what, that's what the customer wants. They are, they're certainly brand loyal in some categories, but I think they are very interested in trying new things. And they trust Ipsy to tell them which brands are cool, interesting, and which could be relevant for them. And so I do see, I wouldn't say that there's been I haven't seen an increase in brand loyalty. I also haven't seen, you know, much of a deterioration in brand loyalty. There was a deterioration, I think, a clear deterioration in brand loyalty maybe 5-7 years ago where, you know, all these new brands were coming online and people wanted to try them out. But I would say in the last 2-3 years, it's been fairly stable. The bigger trend that we've seen is that we've seen new skincare coming on board that really talks to a different demographic. And so Glossier being one great example of that, of course, but other brands that are now doing really well with the Gen Z demographic and really doing great on TikTok. Even some pretty established brands that are able to kind of really renew their customer base. So I think that's been the bigger trend, is more experimentation in skincare and of course, blending skincare and color.
Marcella, you mentioned TikTok a second ago, and I have to ask, you know, what's your take on this? Considering that, you know, Ipsy was started with Michelle Phan, one of the original beauty influencers, like seeing this, you know, evolution of where we are with beauty influencers and ambassadors and creators, like, what do you think of the platform? How are you all utilizing it?
Oh my God, I think it's an amazing platform. I really think it's my favorite platform right now. I think it has so much potential in beauty. And what I love about it is it has a degree of authenticity that really reminds me of the early days on YouTube, where people were, where it was more of a community feel. Of course, I love Instagram as well, and I love what YouTube's become. But I think for me, there's something really special around TikTok. And I very much hope they don't get banned, because I think, I mean, one, of course, we have a partnership with Addison Rae, but two, I just think it's a platform that's bringing a lot of good to the world.
Will you describe, you know, how you found Addison? Because that was obviously another question for me. You know, what's the future of incubated brands within Ipsy?
Absolutely. I mean, within Ipsy, it's a critical part of our future. We're very excited about it. And, well, we are emboldened by our success with Item Beauty. Item Beauty's been a great success. I mean, you look at the brand, and it's amassed about 200,000 followers in less than two months on Instagram. And that's good. But what's more impressive is that the engagement rate is 7%. The average engagement rate for beauty brands, I think, is 0.25%. And so you're talking like 30 times more engaged brand and engaged audience. And that's translating into people trying the products out and being really excited about it. And so we're going to be doing more of these where we find where we can kind of find a niche or a sector of the market that's underserved, where we find a partner that really understands that market, has a lot of credibility in the market, and has a perspective. And where we can bring to bear all of our data, our 160 million product reviews, and our kind of broader Ipsy platform to help the brand succeed. And so we're very excited about it.
Do you think the life cycle of influencers, you know, is changing? Because obviously, you know, for people who are a little bit older, they may not know Addison as well as if they're on TikTok. And I think it's so interesting that, you know, not only Addison has kind of flown out of the gates, but like, Charlie and Dixie for Morphe versus, you know, the Patrick Stars and the Jackie Inas of the world who've been around forever and then, you know, are just launching brands. So what do you think about the momentum that someone like an Addison has today versus, you know, maybe an older guard of beauty influencer?
Well, it's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. You know, when we started talking to Addison, she probably had 10 million or 15 million followers. I think she has, I can't even keep track. She's probably at over 60 million right now on TikTok. And so I have never, and I've been working with influencers before the word influencer existed since 2009, and I have never seen anything like it. Like the growth of this platform and some of the creators of this platform is spellbinding. And I think yes, the life cycle of those creators, you have to learn a lot in a very short period of time, and so it's very hard. You go from nobody, you know, knowing you but your family and friends, to all of a sudden you being a celebrity in less than a year. And I gotta say, like, I'm so proud to be partnering with Addison because she is so handling it so well, and it is not an easy thing to do. And she's just an amazing woman who and a great partner. But it's hard. It's what she is doing, and just the pressure that she has on her shoulders. You wouldn't be able to tell it when you watch her, but I am sure it's there. And so the shortened life cycle makes it very difficult. But of course makes it an amazing business opportunity for them, and they have to take advantage of it. And for us, you know, we were lucky to partner with her.
I thought it was so interesting that, you know, she's been doing more things with Khloe Kardashian and Kourtney Kardashian, you know, giving them relevance for a TikTok audience. You know, who would have thought, right, that those OG influencers, creators would be leaning on her? And I just think that shows like the way that things are changing in beauty. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree. That it's really great to see how the and by the way, we partnered with Khloe a month ago. We launched our partnership, and I'm like a huge Kardashian fan. So I've always watched what they're doing, and I think they are brilliant businesswomen. And so it was such a pleasure to be able to bring on Khloe as an ambassador. So I think that they are just very smart. They are the smartest in the business. So I am not surprised in some ways because, of course, there's true friendship behind it, and it's not manufactured, but it is very smart for Khloe and Kourtney to get closer to the new generation because content and media is how they built their empire. And so I think it's really great to watch, and I think Kourtney and Khloe can provide a lot of great mentorship for Addison.
When you think about other, you know, possibilities in your world in terms of incubated brands, you know, everybody's trying to do this, you know, whether it's like the true brand incubators like the Mesas or the LBPs of the world, or yourselves. And I feel like your strategy is very different. You know, there was Complex, the brushes that you guys launched last year. And here, this is another kind of way to diversify revenue. So where do you kind of see it all fit together?
Well, I think that's how I see it. It all fits together, you know. It's an ecosystem, and we have what's going to make us successful is innovation, and innovation in terms of community engagement, and innovation in terms of product innovation. So, if you can find a trend that's happening or that's about to happen, and really be first to market with that trend in on a product level. And that trend might be a creator that's blowing up, or it might be a technique that's blowing up, or a certain shade, or a certain ingredient. And so if you can react very, very quickly to those changes, you sort of have the crystal ball, and you know what's going to be good and relevant and hot. And you can go out there and make it quickly and get it to market. And that's what we have via Ipsy and all of our creator partnerships and the Glam Bag. We have so much data. So yeah, that's I think there's in the future, I do see it, you know, having more brands and having them even more integrated into the Glam Bag, and a way for the members to rethink their beauty routines and get them what they need. Both, of course, with our third-party brands who we work very, very closely with, and some of them are creating just amazing products, and we're doubling down on those. But I think that there's an opportunity for us to continue to build Made by Collective.
Do you have anything that you can share with us now that you have in the works?
Nothing to share, nothing specific, but I will tell you, you can probably guess in terms of like what categories. I think we're looking at underserved categories. And so I think, you know, this month is Hispanic Heritage Month. And I will say I'm disappointed by how little it's being discussed either in the political arena or, you know, even like, hey, it's our month, but nobody's really talking about it. I'm, of course, Hispanic. I'm from Argentina. And so I think that there are like the Latinx community, there are other communities that don't have brands that they can call their own. And that's what we're going to be out there building.
Do you think that, you know, you bring up a good point. Actually, Liz, a colleague of mine, wrote a story about how, you know, the Latinx consumer has kind of gotten lost in these conversations about inclusivity and diversity, even in the influencer set, and how, you know, when you have a bilingual audience, you may or may not be categorized in the right way. The beauty industry doesn't know exactly what to do with you. So I'm just wondering, like, how do you think that's going to change? Because, I mean, we've seen small changes, obviously, with Black Lives Matter and with Indigenous founders, but it's still quite slow.
Right. Well, first of all, I think the number one priority right now needs to be the Black community. Like, this is the systemic racism that's existed in this country for so long. And they have absolutely borne the brunt and continue to bear the brunt. And we need to be out there as Latins and as all of us really supporting them. And so what we're doing there is we've created a $5 million fund that is investing in Black-owned companies, beauty companies. And we are using our Empowered program, but also all of our other touch points media-wise to bring them notoriety. So I think that that's got to be the priority right now. Having said that, I agree. I think the Latin community is really, really underserved. And I think that there's a huge opportunity. Look, we're entrepreneurs at the end of the day. So it's fine. I actually see it as a great opportunity. I'm from Argentina, as I said. I'm from Latin America. So if there's other folks that don't understand this and are not paying attention to the Latin community, we will fill in the need. So we as entrepreneurs, we're very entrepreneurial. We're resilient. We're hardworking. And we will figure out a way to fill this niche. So I see it more as a business opportunity. It's a shame that it hasn't happened earlier, but now I guess it's an opportunity for all of us.
Thinking about segueing just a little bit, Marcelo, you know, we wrote a ton about this last year, but the way that Ipsy was approaching events in 2019 was really innovative. You know, you obviously really kind of broke down these large format events that people, I think, were getting fatigued by and made them more personalized and intimate, starting with South by Southwest. And, you know, I remember right before South by Southwest this year, before, you know, COVID really hit in the US, you know, you were planning very much to go down that route again. And now here we are. So I'm wondering, how are you kind of approaching events? And is there a way to eventize digital events in the same way?
Well, the answer simply is no, there isn't. We've tried and we've done a good job with it, but it's not the same as being in person and the magic that can happen in that interaction. I'm a huge believer in live events and physical live events. We will bring it back. We've been able to keep most of the team intact at Ipsy, and we're going to bring it back. In the meantime, we've done some really innovative, great things. We did an event. We did a version of Ipsy Live that was digital, where we did a make-off between Iggy Azalea and Nikita Dragon, where we did, we had Doja Cat perform. And this was just like at the very beginning when she was starting to kind of really break out. So it was awesome to have her. And we've done a bunch of Ipsy assemblies, one with Sharon Shooter, who was I'm sure you know the force behind Pull Up for Change, and we're doing another one. So we're doing a lot of things, and they are successful, but it's not the same. And I am looking forward to the moment where we can bring it back, and we can all be, you know, doing this in person.
Do you think the idea, you know, of, I mean, these were big ticket events also, you know, I mean, maybe not yours in the sense that because it was very much for members, but I mean, across beauty, you know, you really had to pay to play at things like BeautyCon or some of the other summits there. So now, I mean, how are you kind of, I mean, we've talked a lot about the ways that you guys are diversifying, but you know, it's, you can't charge someone a $200 ticket to go to a Zoom event. So how are you thinking about that?
Well, I mean, exactly. And this is the if you talk to the music industry, they are, you know, suffering. And so music artists are suffering because, you know, the events is really important for them and they don't have those. And they there's a lot of things that have been tried, and there's some, like, I think there was one that was like a drive-in music event, and they've tried a couple of those. I don't know that anybody's tried really to kind of revive the beauty component right now. I don't think it's doable. Who wants to go and pay $200 for a physical event where they might get COVID? You know, it's just not, it's just not going to happen. But yeah, in terms of charging for these events, no, you have so many options. You're not going to be able to charge for them. And so that makes it, that means that your budget is very limited because, you know, you can't spend $2 million on a live event, on a digital event where you can't charge anything and just hope that people come, unless maybe you're a huge brand like, you know, Anheuser-Busch or something like that. But it's very, I don't think the ROI is there.
When you think forward, you know, Marcella, we're in the latter phases of 2020 and we're going into 2021. How are you really thinking about innovation for Ipsy and what you want to accomplish in a time of so much uncertainty?
Well, you know what? There's so much coming up, Priya. I think that'll probably have to be our next podcast because there's some that I can't totally share. But in terms of the things that we have up and running right now, more brands with Made by Collective. More and better merchandising. Again, answering the question, was it worth it for me this month, in a better way? Better ways to personalize. Ultra personalization is only available to Glambag Plus so far. It's not available for Glambag. And so we are trying to figure out what component of that can we bring to the Glambag, and should we bring to the Glambag? Should it be a different proposition? And then we have one thing that I'd love to tell you about, and we'll talk to you. I mean, we love working with you, Priya. So we'll tell you as soon as it's ready. But it's really exciting. There's two really exciting things that we're going to be launching, one in a month and one in February. That is going to be really, it's going to be the next version of what we're doing.
Anything you can tease just a little bit?
I'm going to get in trouble with Lonnie if I say anything.
Marcella, last question for you. When you think about the change in like legacy and indie brands right now, you know, indie brands are really taking so much market share away from legacy brands, and you have a great mix with Ipsy, like the way that you all kind of merchandise those brands. Like, are you, what's your bet? Who is it on?
Well, you know, I can't say that. How do you pronounce CeraVe? Is it CeraVe?
You know, I thought it was CeraVe, but people are saying CeraVe, but I know what you're talking about. I use it. I've been using it for a long time, but I thought it was a brand like Cetaphil, which has been around.
I think it is very similar to Cetaphil, which is funny. That's a brand that I use. But I, you know, that's a L'Oreal brand. They're killing it on TikTok. You look at e.l.f., they've been around for a long time. I would definitely not consider them an indie brand anymore, but they are really killing it on TikTok. And so I think it's a level playing field again. You know, I think the established brands maybe were a little bit slow on the Instagram bandwagon and just kind of really adapting to social media. But who knows? They seem to be off to a good start when it comes to TikTok and kind of taking advantage of this new market. So I would say, I don't know, maybe it's the comeback of the majors.
I think they'd be happy to hear you say that. Thank you so much, Marcel. It was great seeing you, and we'll talk again soon.
Likewise. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Glossy Beauty Podcast. Tune in next week for another episode. And of course, that means if you haven't subscribed, please hit that button.